This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. We're coming to you live from the studios of WCQS in downtown Asheville. And we're very close to the Blue Ridge Parkway, 469 miles of parkway that offer majestic views of mountains, stunning views of diverse wildlife, but also it offers a unique culinary experience. A new cookbook from Tupelo Honey Cafe highlights the emerging world of Appalachian cuisine, a blend of native flavors and new techniques. Tupelo Honey Cafe began in Asheville in 2000 and now has 6 restaurants. There are more scheduled to open soon, including one in Raleigh. Elizabeth Sims is co-author of Tupelo Honey Cafe, New Southern Flavors from the Blue Ridge Mountains. Elizabeth, welcome. It's good to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Brian Sinokas is the chef at Tupelo Honey Cafe, co-author of this book. Brian, welcome to you.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
So let me ask you, Brian, what makes Tupelo Honey unique, do you think?
You know, I mean, it's a special place. It's something that comes from a lot of my passion in it, obviously. And, you know, it's the fresh ingredients, you know, scratch made is the big key. As we expand, keeping that true, you know, is very important to us. You know, so having that, you know, through every town we go to in the past, you know, bringing it forward is just you know, it's our passion. It's important. You know, we went so far as to start our own farm years back to really be involved in it, understand how everything works.
You came to farming as a restaurateur, as a chef, right?
Right. Yeah. I'd always been a gardener and then decided to jump a little bit further into that that pile of dirt. And
that's a different profession, isn't it?
Yeah. It's one all by itself. You don't really need to do two.
But you're from this area or the Western North Carolina in general.
Yeah. I've been in Asheville since 95.
What, Elizabeth, let me ask you, what is Appalachian cuisine? What do we mean when we say that?
You know, I think Appalachian cuisine is on the cusp of really being recognized as an important culinary region. And you know, mountain people are very self-sufficient. They're very creative. And I'll steal a term from my friend Ronnie Lundy. They're also radically inclusive. So that means really accepting of all the mash of cultures that come together in the mountains.
That's a kind of a paradox. And you mentioned that in the introduction of your book, the idea of this sort of rugged individualism, but community, inclusion, it's individualism because we might have to make do on our own, but we're certainly not going to let anybody suffer, right?
That's right. It's all about community.
All about community and bringing people together and often around food.
Yeah, it all centers around the kitchen. It always does.
How has this changed? I mean, the idea of regional cuisine, of course, is very important. It's really kind of caught on. And if you happen to be in a region like the South, you're really in a lot better shape than if you are in some regions where the food just ain't that good, right? But how do you think it's changed just in the South when we talk about Southern cuisine?
Well, it's kind of coming back really full circle because it started this way. You know, we didn't ship food, you know, a couple hundred years ago. You had what you had in the mountain. You know, you use things that were local to you. We deal with a lot of trout, blueberries, you know, sweet potatoes and apples, especially in this area. And they got kind of carried away with, you know, shipping things far and far and further away. You know, so kind of bringing that back home now and using the local ingredients. You know, Asheville especially, we have a great artisan community from every aspect, including the farmers themselves. So you can go to a local farmer's market here, you know, during the week and find about anything you want.
It is amazing how that has come when the idea of good food meant exotic food from other places. It was an old Burns and Allen routine where Gracie is George Burns and Gracie, they're in Paris and they're ordering wine. Gracie says, "I'll have a California wine." The waiter walks away. George looks at Gracie and says, "Gracie, why on earth would you? We're in Paris. Why would you do that?" She says, "Oh, George, you know, the best wine is always imported." So that, and then that's kind of how we've come full circle. I mean, that was the 1950s. This is the second cookbook, Elizabeth. And how has this one changed? What's different about this? Apart from the recipes, which I'm sure are not the same.
Yeah. Well, the first book, and let me jump back if I could and just say, you know, what Brian was talking about just now, the South. When you talk about Southern cuisine, there's no such thing as one size fits all. It's different in New Orleans than it is in Nashville, and so our region is really just emerging as a culinary region. The first book was really focused on Asheville. It has a lot of history about Asheville, and used a lot of recipes that Brian, who's been the executive chef since the restaurant opened. They were recipes he'd used in the restaurant over the years. The second book, he was really able to cut loose and just do whatever he wanted to. So it was very fun to do with him.
You got fried black-eyed peas in there.
Yeah, one of my favorites.
Tell us about it. Give us that recipe roughly.
Well, having black-eyed peas, you know, just something that, you know, we always look at different ways. I look at unique ways to use foods. You know, we've always known them stewed forever and ever. You know, you have them in whatever your flavoring you put on them. And I like to, you know, crispy fry things, give it. I'm always looking for layers of flavors and layers of textures. And that crispy cornmeal on it just kind of sets it apart.
You got – no, but you got canned black-eyed peas in there.
I do have canned there, and I have, you know, dried ones and other recipes. I like to let you be flexible with food. By all means, if you're comfortable by simmering or soaking and simmering black-eyed peas, great way to do it. You know, not everyone is. I like to be accessible with the cookbook. It's meant for the home cook. I want them to be comfortable and try things. You know, if you try it that way, go ahead and then try moving on, progressing to cooking the beans.
You're the chef, but let me ask you about this. I have discovered the pressure cooker and the genius of the pressure, how it makes me a genius when I make beans. They come out like – am I right about that, or have I just been lucky? Is it pressure cooker a nice way to – it's working for me, I'll tell you.
Yeah, a lot of cooking is half luck and half skill. You know, you start out with the luck and then hopefully it draws into skill. With that, yeah, having the proper equipment and knowing how to use it can definitely make your life easier in the kitchen.
What has changed for you? You've been open about here in Asheville anyway for about 14 years.
Right.
How has the restaurant changed?
You know, it's still the same concept, same family, community-driven type of idea. But now to be able to go into new towns and just it's, you know, we're all growing from it. I like to tell the story that I've had a lot of people over the years that have gotten really good in our restaurants or our restaurant downtown and then moved on because they had nowhere to go. And, you know, they weren't getting my job because I'm not going anywhere. And so they got really good and then finally moved on. So now we get to promote them into new cities, become GMs or chefs of their own stores. And that's been really great to watch people, you know, grow within your business.
But let's talk about that. How many restaurants now do you have?
We have six open.
Six open and how many online? And
three on the way.
Three on the way. So that makes you a chain. Brian, that you are now a chain. You know, so talk about that. I mean, it's sort of the idea of being a local restaurant and, yeah, and also a chain.
You know, officially, once you hit three stores and you have the same name, you are a chain. We like to call ourselves really a group of independent restaurants, you know, because we still have that passion. Like, again, it is still fresh ingredients. It is still scratch made. So, you know, we're not compromising on our value equations and our quality of food, which is the big thing. And it, does it get a little more difficult doing it? Yeah, of course. But I do a lot of traveling now. You know, my wife and kids stay home most of the time and miss me, just like my dad when I was growing up as a salesman. And but that's part of the deal and keeping it. And people need to see my face constantly because I am the backbone of Tupelo Honey. You know, I've been the food since the beginning. And no one can preach that more than I can.
How has the menu changed at Tupelo Honey just here in Asheville? Has it changed much?
It's grown over the years. When it started out, you know, I mean, I was – you know, quite a bit younger back then and kind of had a lot more ideas of different foods I wanted to explore. And I would be, you know, every spectrum you could think of with it. And we realized after time that people don't come to Tupelo Honey looking for sweetbreads or for lamb or certain things. You know, so we kind of honed into our sweet spot on the menu and got things what we like to call our Tupelo favorites or our lifers, you know, items that are so good that, you know, they just can't go away. And we've had that situation in the past where we've taken things off the menu. We get lots of comment cards, which we read all of them. And people are saying, we're not coming back because you don't have this anymore. And, you know, so we listen to that and things have come back. You know, Nutty mm-hmm. Fried Chicken's a prime example of that.
And well, Emily, what are people looking for these days? We talked about the sort of the Burns and Allen joke 60 years ago. What are people looking for when they go out to a restaurant these days?
You know, we've actually done some research around what our customers are looking for when they come visit us. And the key thing is they don't want to go somewhere and have processed food. And you said we are a chain, and Brian is correct in the official definition, in the Wikipedia definition, I guess we are. But we're still owned by one person, and he's passionate about this food and this experience. And I think the experience is also something that our customers are really after.
Well, Elizabeth, you talked about the recipes in this book. This is the second one from Tupelo Honey. How do you go about selecting and looking for recipes in a book like this?
Brian likes to keep a notebook by his bed because he wakes up in the middle of the night with ideas about recipes, and then he and I talk about them. It's his food, and so really he's the final say-so. But we collaborated on what we thought were important kind of categories of food that represented Appalachia. And I had to tell him to stop bringing in recipes.
Where is pimento cheese on the food pyramid, Ryan?
Exactly. Well, pimento cheese is pretty important around us.
Yeah, it's critical. I came here and I was on the show several years ago and somebody just mentioned pimento cheese in this part of the interview. I had never even heard of it. And now I really – a day does not go by.
The pate of the South.
The pate of the South. What are some of the other talk to me more about your experience as a farmer. I mean, again, hard work, not what you grew up doing. Did it really inform anything, inform your job as a chef?
Well, first of all, it gave me a lot of respect for the people out there doing it and understanding what they go through, you know, and what, you know, food should really cost. You know, and understanding that. So, but, you know, I took over a place that was an abandoned berry farm. It was 12 acres. And what was left were 1,000 blueberry bushes that were completely overgrown with brambles. So it took me a little while to get that kind of cleared out. And then I built a greenhouse and mostly was doing a berry farm and then grew edible flowers and different herbs and things for the restaurant. So everything I grew went to the restaurant, which was the best part about it. And just understanding, I wanted to see how that chain really worked and understand, you know, and having, you know, when you bring rosemary that you just cut down an hour ago into the restaurant and you're cleaning that off, I mean, you wouldn't be surprised how much gum is on your fingers from it as opposed to something that's been sitting, you know, even a week ago was cut down. So knowing that it's that fresh was just so amazing to see it and the flavors come through.
That's one of the things that's changed a lot these days, isn't it, Elizabeth? The idea that we want to know our producers, the whole farmers market scene has a lot to do with wanting to see and have a personal relationship with the people who grow your food.
Absolutely. I mean, I think people are very thoughtful about their food, the quality of the food, that it's fresh, that it's for many people it needs to be organic. GMOs certainly have entered the food discussion, and so it's interesting. Food is really an anchor for so many discussions about so many things.
Well, you are what you eat. Kind
That's
of hard
right.
to get around that. And so you can imagine knowing where it came from is pretty important. And we get back to this idea of chain. Because chain is associated with so many compromises in the production and the processing of food, it's gotten a bad name. But it doesn't really relate to the number of restaurants you own. It's the question of your relationship to food, right? Your relationship as a producer to a restaurant.
Yeah, your practices, your integrity are really what makes the difference.
We're live from Asheville. I am talking with Brian Sinakis and Elizabeth Sims. They are the authors of the second cookbook, Recipes, this one called Tupelo Honey Cafe, New Southern Flavors from the Blue Ridge Mountains, and you're listening to The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. So is there a limit to how far this empire can grow? Is there a point at which you do become like a chain?
Well, I mean, at this point, you know, we're happy in the Southeast. We're growing, you know, in a way that is comfortable for us and keep it, you know, in the good thought process. You know, it's not – doesn't really have a big, you know, goal of, you know, 500 stores or something. It's not, you know, something that's on the table. It's growing what means well to us and in places, markets that are good for us.
What are those markets? Are there places that aren't good for you?
Well, I mean, I don't see us, you know, jumping down to Texas right away. You know, it's a whole different kind of South for us. It's kind of – I find it harder to keep controls on something like that when you get that far away. I mean, I like to be able to travel through the stores like I do now and be seen. I want people to know who I am face-to-face, be able to, you know, touch them, work on the line with them and shake hands at the end of the day and –
Remember that time when Colonel Sanders, they like Kentucky Fried Chicken, had to change their whole image? So they did this whole PR campaign where the like the Colonel, some guy dressed like the Colonel, went in like slashing his crop, you know, his riding crop, saying this is not my food. It was just a wild thing. So expanding, are there places too, you know, because I spent a fair amount of time in places where there was industrial agriculture like Iowa, and that's the place, oddly enough, where farmers markets and local food was the hardest to catch on, where they were growing a lot of food, but it wasn't going to people's stomachs. It was going into cows.
You know, I think one of the greatest developments, and this is very true in the Triangle area, is and it's true here, there are smart entrepreneurs who are actually creating community farmer aggregation so that they are actually supplying restaurants. You know, we serve so much food in a day that we can't take tomatoes from Farmer Joe in the back, at the back door and say, yes, we can use these. So we rely on these smaller companies that can go to the to the farms, collect enough produce, and then bring it to us so that we can support the local farmer.
Well, and that's the great thing about restaurants like this is that they do then encourage distributors and wholesalers
right.
to put these aggregations together. So tell us about the challenges. Are they in opening a restaurant in a market like Raleigh, significantly different than Asheville? And what does that mean to be in Raleigh?
Well, you know, for Raleigh, obviously it's a big city for us, you know, and for me that's exciting because Asheville is really lucky that it has a great food community. You know, and I had some time in Raleigh, you know, last week, and it was great. The people were very excited about it. I like the city. I ate out, really good food, which inspires me to go and know I'm going to a place like that. So Raleigh being one that has several, you know, food co-ops working together, bringing the local farmers together, which is important because it's obviously harder and harder to find different – when you're serving the same menu in each place you go to, you want to have like ingredients. You know, we're dealing with vegetables. You know, they're pretty similar, so it's called bringing them together. And we have some Asheville people like Hickory Nut Gap Farms growing with us and coming to near areas. So that's kind of a nice thing as well.
Great food vibe there in the Triangle. So on the one hand, yeah, there's an infrastructure and more competitive, kind of an interesting challenge for you.
Yeah, I like that. I'm not really worried about the competition. We never really feel that. In Asheville, we have the Asheville Independent Restaurant Group, which we have a lot of independents here, and we all kind of support each other, do events together, and really work on building the community rather than thinking about whose restaurant you're going to eat at 7 days a week.
Great to talk with you. So very nice to have you here and see this new cookbook. Elizabeth Sims, co-author of Tupelo Honey Cafe, New Southern Flavors from the Blue Ridge Mountains. Brian Sinokas is the chief chef at the Tupelo Honey Cafe here in Asheville and now around the region. And they're going to sign books tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Malaprop's Books in Asheville. And May 22nd, they're going to be at Park Road Books in Charlotte. Thanks so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things. If you want more information, our website is stateofthings.org. Our program produced by Laura Lee, Nicole Campbell, Megan Mataferi, and Anita Rao. Robin Copley is our technical director. Brent Wolf, the news director. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.